Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the pro wrestling journalism capital of the world. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is in Union City and Weehawken, respectively. Here on Blog Talk Radio, ladies and gentlemen, we are working the marks. And I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, the professor, Fernando Uribe. And he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the glorious, the illustrious, the dubious, the notorious. PBR superstar Patrick Rivera. What's going on, baby?
You got the doobie part right, that's for sure. I'm hanging in there. I'm hanging in there. It's fucking Friday, okay? It's Friday. I'm excited. We're a week out from the Royal Rumble. We got a big, big, big NFL matchup this weekend between the San Francisco 49ers and the Dallas Cowboys. I know you're excited. I'm excited. I'm fucking tickled pink. I can't wait for it to happen, and I can't wait to give you people this very special episode of Working the Marks today.
That's right, folks. And again, always write to the program. We love to hear from you, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Also, make sure you check us out on Instagram, @working_themarks. And, of course, also follow us on Twitter, @working_marks. You can always check us out on our own personal platforms as well, on Instagram @PattyReakin, PADDY.
No, don't message me. I'm a jerk. Please leave me alone.
I can account for that. Yes, do not message him. He is a moody motherfucker. Yes.
Yes.
And check me out as well at the Fernando Zone. As well, folks, also on Twitter, check out the PBR superstar @PatrickSKVM. And certainly check me out on the same handle on Twitter as well, @TheFernandoZone. Always make sure you like us on Facebook, folks. Special shout-out to our administrator, D. Rotten, who always overlooks the page. This episode of Working the Marks is brought to you by Fancast Media. Make sure you follow them on all their social media platforms. And, of course, check out our episodes at blogtalkradio.com/workingthemarks and also on all of the platforms where you get your podcasts, folks, on SoundCloud and Spotify, and certainly we appreciate your support here every single week on Blog Talk Radio. As Pat alluded to, we are 8 days away from the Royal Rumble. And I got to tell you, when you think about, folks, you think about the Royal Rumble, this will be the 35th edition of the Royal Rumble. And I remember like it was yesterday seeing Hacksaw Jim Duggan win the very first Royal Rumble on the USA Network, long before it ever entered pay-per-view, actually, the very next year, it was on pay-per-view. But, Pat, a little trivia for you. Who did Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan eliminate in the Royal Rumble in 1988 to be the inaugural winner, brother?
Oh, fuck. I mean, it's hard for me to remember because I was just, like, a small child back then. Obviously, you were 25 years old, so it's a lot clearer for you. But I'm going to go with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. No, maybe Hacksaw Jim Duggan. No, not Hacksaw Jim. I'm going to go Big John Studd. Big John Studd, maybe, or a King Haku?
Good.
I don't know.
Good guess. But WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan eliminated a guy who I think should be in the Hall of Fame as well. Don't get me started on this rant. The One Man Gang, baby. So, Yeah. Talented guy who would go on to, you know, obviously after losing the Royal Rumble, he would be on television for a while as he would go pursue, long before Ancestry.com, folks, okay, before he ever had that website and you had to go find your roots and heritage, he did that. He would go into deepest, darkest Africa and come back after seeking his roots out and would return as the African Dream, Akeem. A little wrestling history there for our audience, folks.
Danate. See, yep. you wouldn't understand that, Uribe, because as the African-American on the show, 14%, by the way, as the African-American on the show, the lone African-American on the show, I know what it's like to get in touch with your roots and your origin. And Brother Hakeem, you know, it was really deep. It was a really special time for him. And then obviously having Slick at his side, I mean, only made it better. So, big up to Hakeem, power to the people. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. And again, but, you know, as we approach the 35th edition of the Royal Rumble, 8 days away, Pat, and obviously, you know, we'll have a good breakdown next week here on the show as a preview for the Royal Rumble. Obviously, I think, you know, the road to WrestleMania begins next Saturday night in San Antonio. So it'll be interesting. Obviously, but before we get to the Royal Rumble, folks, we have a jam-packed show here this week. Some interesting news. Obviously, you know, we will get to our main event topic. Tragically, we will be examining the passing of Jay Briscoe, an amazing performer, one half of the legendary tag team, the Briscoe Brothers, you know, really who generates so much attention, you know, not just in Ring of Honor, but really had become like this household name. We'll be discussing the passing of Jay Briscoe in our main event tonight here. So as you tune in on Blog Talk Radio, we'll get to that shortly. But some other news in the meantime, obviously, around the news cycle, Pat. But interesting, on the on his weekly edition of Oh, You Didn't Know podcast, Road Dogg had an interesting take this week. He said, quote, WWE will give you a second chance. He knows that firsthand, obviously. They will give you an opportunity if it's business savvy, and bringing CM Punk back might be, the reason it might be is because he's a needle mover. One of the various quotes from the Oh, You Didn't Know podcast by Road Dogg, Jesse James. You know, a little interesting foreshadowing there, Pat.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he's putting something out there. Maybe he's working the sheets. You know, Road Dogg knows how to get attention. We all know that. And Road Dogg is a guy who comes from a wrestling family, who knows the business inside and out. And I know he's had some controversial comments lately that, you know, made a certain fan base that's a little touchier. But that don't really take much. I think maybe he's throwing something out there. Obviously, the last bit of news that we heard in regards to CM Punk was that, you know, Tony Khan was basically kind of keeping him on ice, and they were trying to negotiate some sort of a deal for the non-compete clause, if I recall correctly. So Billy Boddy had reported that not that long ago. We're just kind of waiting to see what goes on with Punk. It's anybody's guess at this point. I don't know the length of the contract time that's still left. Some people had speculated it was in the ballpark of maybe 2 to 3 years. I think if they work out a deal, and if Tony Khan's smart, and again, if Tony Khan's smart, if I were Tony Khan, I would just have Punk sit out the remainder of the deal, or actually I would have Punk come back, work for like 6 months, be on TV, spike the rating. And then once he's done with that, I would just get rid of him, have him put over the young guys, let him go and go to WWE and make his money, you know, for probably his last run. But again, we don't know how it's going to play out. And again, it's all hypothetical at this point. But I would not be surprised if Punk came back. Now, if he came back at the Rumble, that would be something. I highly, highly doubt that. I think if he's going to come back, it's probably going to be next year. But that remains to be seen.
No, great breakdown there. And, you know, good to see, obviously, Road Dogg understand the importance of second chances for everybody that saw the DX documentary over the summer on A&E. And by the way, all those documentaries, the biographies, the documentaries were so well done over the summer. Obviously, watching the DX one I thought was interesting. Certainly seeing the awareness that Road Dogg had, especially with his struggles with substance abuse, being let go of before from a production perspective that he was in backstage with Paul Levesque. Seems to be back in the good graces, obviously working again in production backstage and Gorilla probably. I'm not sure what kind of creative he's involved in, whether he's working with Shawn Michaels in NXT or with Paul Levesque on the main roster. But again, his podcast gets attention. He's a guy that understands that Phil Brooks, you know, is a still a draw. Maybe not the draw he once was. Certainly, I think And we'll get to the ratings later, obviously, to sort of break down like we do every episode. But, I mean, it's clear, Pat. I mean, again, I'm not going to give too much away, but a year ago at this time, like, you know, AEW was doing a million, over a million, and obviously featuring CM Punk. We were moving into his program with MJF, which we all know was historic. The promos, the match going into Revolution. So, again, I think that Road Dogg sees his value, and as you alluded to, it remains to be seen. Obviously, there's a lot of money left on the deal that he has. I think he signed it. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think Billy Body and others reported, I think it's somewhere between a 3-year deal or 4-year deal. So I think at a cost of $5 million per, that's a lot of money that Tony Khan is going to have to eat if he doesn't want to bring him on television. So the buyout, obviously, not to say that Tony has money, you know. I mean, his father has fuck around money, yes, but I don't know if Tony does, per se. So it'll be interesting, obviously, if there's a buyout, what the non-compete is, as you said. Certainly, maybe next year's WrestleMania, as they head to Philadelphia for WrestleMania 40, I think will be interesting. So wait and see, folks, yep, when it comes to CM Punk, because, you know, a lot going on, obviously. When it comes to him, and you know, he's easy clickbait for these dirt sheet writers for sure. Other news this week, obviously, I know we talked about off the air. It seems that the dirt sheets are, well, I mean, certain sources, I don't want to say of all of it, but apparently there's an update about The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, appearing at the Royal Rumble coming up next Saturday at the Alamo Dome. Unfortunately, Dave Meltzer reporting, we'll get to Dave because Dave's in a little bit of hot water himself, but not just only Dave, but other, I think Dave, Sean Ross Sapp as well as Wade Keller are reporting that apparently, you know, and I'm not going to read the entire quote, but those close to the situation have noted WWE coming out with new Rock merchandise, maybe more related to the 30th anniversary of Raw coming up. We'll get to that in a minute. It's a big story as well. Apparently, quote, we were told that unless he changes his mind in the next few days, since the deadline for Mania plans is coming, he's indicated he won't have time to get into the kind of shape he feels he needs to be in to do a main event match with his cousin, Joseph Anoa, a.k.a. Roman Reigns, but kept the door open for some
Anoa'i.
Of course, it's a possibility that something being kept a secret from everybody. WWE has always had a backup direction this year, given they were aware Johnson was not a sure thing for some time. As time went on and he didn't agree, felt likelihood has lessened. I don't know if he's officially turned him down, but the only indication is that it was considered less likely than a few months ago. Billy Body, who I think I would trust more than any other wrestling, quote, and I'll use the word in connotation very carefully, journalist, I'll take Billy Body at his word. He seems to have better sources than everybody. It seems like Dwayne Johnson and Joseph Anoa'i is going to be that main event at SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California, coming up in April. I have some theories that we've talked about off the air, obviously. I have a theory about maybe two-night title defenses for Roman Reigns, very much like Yokozuna, cousin of his, back at WrestleMania 10 at the Garden. But I think Dwayne's just trying to work people, Pat.
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, they don't want to give away the big surprise, would you? You know, I mean, they know exactly what they're doing. Everything has been tight-lipped. You don't want to spoil it, but the seeds are definitely planted. So I just think that everybody should just sit back, enjoy it, let it happen, let it marinate organically. Whether it's true or not, I'm going with Billy Body. I think the deal is done. You know, you don't build up something like this. You don't lead to all of this to just do away with it. You know what I mean? You can't do that. You just can't do that. And they've been alluding to this for quite some time, and the fans are hungry for it. And it's going to be a special moment when it does happen. But yeah, I mean, look, you can't just say, hey, The Rock's going to be at WrestleMania. You can't do that, you know? You want to sell some shows, you know? You want to build up a program. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. But, you know, Meltzer being Meltzer, right?
Yeah, and we'll get to Dave, Uncle Dave, in a minute. But it's interesting, though, Pat, because we've talked about it off the air, obviously, and I think that the fantasy booker in me, in an ideal world, would say, you know what? There's a lot of variables here that are kind of coming into fruition. There's a lot of symmetry that's presenting itself. Raw 30 is where? Monday in Philadelphia, in the cesspool of the continental United States, you know, the Wells Fargo Center. Why is that significant? Well, you know, in that very same building 8 years ago, you know, The Rock had to come out to save Roman Reigns during the Royal Rumble when, let's be fair, it was a stark difference from the year before when he was eliminating everybody. And subsequently, I believe he broke at the time the record was Kane's record of most eliminations in a Royal Rumble. You know, folks, you know, go on Peacock, you know, and again, you know, after you endure the 97 ads during a PLE that you're watching on replay, you can see what happened. You can see the crowd clearly. Now, it is Philadelphia, so they turn on everybody, but you could tell clearly this is a guy they were pushing, and the crowd turned on Roman Reigns. And even with Rocky coming out to help him against Kane and the Big Show to then eventually eliminate Rusev, I mean, you can watch it, folks. I mean, there was a chorus of boos in the Wells Fargo Center. So I don't know, man. Maybe there's just a fancy booker in me, and thinking, oh, what a full circle moment. You know, there is an acknowledgement ceremony on Monday in Philadelphia on Raw. You know, apparently Reigns is going to demand the locker room acknowledge him. Maybe there's that one guy who won't acknowledge him, and maybe we'll remind him, hey, you know what? You wouldn't be where you are if I didn't save you 8 years ago in this very building. Maybe, Pat, that's fantasy booking on my part, but would it be the worst thing to see on television, bro?
Absolutely not. I think if it does happen, it's going to be great. They're going to generate a shit ton of interest. And more importantly, they're going to pave the road to one of the biggest main events in the history of the business. Okay, never mind WWE. We're talking about the business here. So I definitely think that there's a lot of things to consider. And, you know, for all you marks out there, all you casuals, whatever you are that's listening, how about that for long-term storytelling, huh?
Because if it does go down that way, that's going to be some of the best long-term storytelling you've ever seen, honestly.
And again, Pat, that's why I think I'm kind of theorizing in my mind. Like, I think this is real long-term storytelling. It's 8 years of a buildup. And, you know, again, listen, Paul Levesque, infinitely smarter than I'll ever be when it comes to being creative for pro wrestling. But this wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, dude, to prognosticate. Right, in the sense of what it means, the significance. It's Philadelphia, the full circle moment. Again, I'm sure Paul will have something infinitely better than I just theorized. But it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, I think. Again, but maybe that's just me because I'm biased.
No, absolutely not. I think it's great. I think what you're coming up with is really, really great, and I look forward to seeing what happens.
It'll definitely be worth noting for sure. Again, and that leads us into this Monday, obviously live from the Wells Fargo Center in the cesspool of our continental United States, Patrick, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Raw will celebrate its 30th anniversary of its premiere. I'm sure insert old joke at any time. I remember watching it on USA, emanating from the Manhattan Center. You know, Vince McMahon with that awful red bow tie and tuxedo that we all come to learn, right, that we loved from his Saturday Night Main Event days. And hello, everyone, and welcome to Monday Night Raw. And, you know, Macho Man Randy Savage, along with there was a comedian that he had in the beginning with sunglasses. The name escapes me. But it was the dawning of a new era. You know, we grew up watching primetime wrestling. Even before that, Tuesday Night Titans on USA. But now this was going to be the first ever live weekly episodic wrestling program. And it changed the business. Obviously, it motivated other wrestling companies to do shows on Monday nights. It's a historic achievement, man. 30 years of Monday Night Raw, again, as it emanates this Monday. from Philadelphia. Before we get to some memories there, I'll just say right from the onset, you know, it was a brand new experiment by Vince McMahon. Again, one of many great creative, you know, projects that he and, you know, that he produced. Again, the creative genius that is Vince McMahon. I got to tell you, what stands out for me really early on in Raw was the fact that, you know, going into that year's WrestleMania, you know, in Las Vegas, WrestleMania 9, you know, the return of Hulk Hogan on television. You know, he had been off TV since the previous WrestleMania after beating Sid Justice in the Hoosier Dome, that double main event there, WrestleMania 8. You know, getting Hulk Hogan early on as Raw launched, that was big, man. Talk about trying to boost that rating up. You wanted to impress. You wanted to make sure it got off to a hot start at the USA Network. That's one of the most visible memories for me. Again, 30 years, but that was one of the first ones, Pat, that I can think of.
Well, obviously, I mean, with the spectacular ending of WrestleMania 9, we all know that, you know, having Hulk Hogan back was just so huge. But Monday Night Raw's had some of the best moments ever. And, you know, Vince again, man, genius, ahead of the curve. You know, people could talk about him personally all they want to, but as far as it goes with wrestling and the wrestling business and just business in general, guy's a genius, man. And he's innovated so many great ideas that, you know, people basically jumped on and emulated, you know, as a direct result of Vince doing it so well. So, you know, obviously this is a testament to the genius of Vince McMahon. I look forward to him being there. I'm sure he will be in some capacity. I would love for him to come out at the beginning. I think that would be awesome. But we'll see what happens. Either way, the Marks are going to have their underwear in a bunch. Some of them probably wear panties. And I'm not talking about the girls. And not that there's anything wrong with that. It's 2023, but you
well,
get the
yeah.
gist of it.
Of course. But, Pat, you know, also, too, and by the way, I think another historic element about what Raw represents this Monday is, let's be fair, for years, the premier event on Monday nights was Monday Night Football by the NFL. And this is the first time
yeah.
that, you know, there was going to be maybe some other viewing content. And, again, long before – again, we're talking about long before cable really evolved. Long before anything streaming like Sling or AT&T or DirecTV or whatever, I mean, Monday Night Football was that marquee program to watch on Monday nights. And it still is. The NFL is still king in this country, in North America,
yeah.
per se, you know, when it comes to television viewership. It still does the best numbers. I mean, case in point, this past Monday night, the end of Wild Card Weekend, you know, Tampa and Dallas did 30.8 million viewers. I mean, not a surprise for Monday Night Football, especially, you know, a Wild Card game of that significance. But the point is that kudos to Vince, because that was a risky enterprise to put on a program at, you know, 8 o'clock. I think it was, yes, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Raw was at 9. To just put on a show at 9 o'clock. Yes, it was USA Network, and I get it still. Maybe a lot of cable systems maybe still weren't carrying USA. I think they were, because they've always been basic cable. But, you know, to put that up against the NFL, man, kudos to Vince. That was as gutsy a move business-wise as you could ever think of by an entrepreneur to do that. Because, again, the NFL's been king forever, and that's not changing anytime soon. But again, that's we don't give Vince enough flowers when it comes to smart business decisions. There's been a lot of them. Yeah, there's been misses like every other billionaire, so whatever. When Marks want to start menstruating about Vince, oh, well, Vince has had these failures. I mean, give me a fucking break, okay? I mean, Jesus Christ. I said this last week to you. You know what? Steve Jobs didn't have any bumps in the road with Apple. You know, Bill Gates didn't have any bumps in the road with Microsoft. Come on, folks. You know, you don't need an MBA from Rutgers Business School to understand that, like, every businessman is going to have hiccups. But Vince has had a lot of profitable achievements. And the first one, let's be honest, man, was Monday Night Raw. Other than WrestleMania, other than investing a lot of his own money into the success of WrestleMania just 8 years prior, Raw was that another risky venture that paid off, Pat.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I think that Vince, I mean, it takes a lot of guts to do what he did. You know what I'm saying? It really, really does. And you and I had talked about this off the air about how, you know, people that are very sensitive about wrestling, you know, the people that get very emotional about all this Vince McMahon stuff, and in their mind it's still real to them, damn it. You know, these people, they can't distinguish between the character Mr. McMahon, the businessman Vince McMahon, the promoter Vince McMahon. Like, they can't distinguish between all of these people and the real person Vince McMahon. They can't. Look, he hasn't been the greatest person, but he's not running for president, you know, even though that probably doesn't matter if you're a decent person. You know, he's not trying to be the Pope. He's not Mother Teresa. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just, come on. Like, you know, he's a wrestling promoter. It's literally what it is. And I think, you know, a certain section of the audience get a little touchy about it, and they have some sort of strange vendetta against this guy whose literally only goal was to entertain all of you people. That's all he was trying to do. He's trying to entertain you people. And I think that, you know, again, people take a lot of information and run with it. You get the Mark conspiracy theories and stuff like that. But, you know, Vince, we've said it here a million times. Some people might call us the Vince Apologist Show. It's reality, man. You know, we're living in reality here. And the reality is that Vince McMahon is a fantastic businessman, somebody who paved the way for a lot of people, for a lot of other wrestling companies and what they do. You know, a lot of the stuff that Tony Khan does with AEW, Vince McMahon started that. The stuff that Impact did, shit, even WCW borrowed from him at one point, you know? So you gotta give the devil his due, you know? And you really got to recognize the greatness that we saw and the greatness that is Vince McMahon. And, yeah, I'm just super excited for this upcoming episode of Raw. And, again, you know, Vince is the guy who created all this stuff, and he will continue to innovate in the business. And I look forward to seeing what's going to happen.
No, absolutely. And, again, a great lineup of legends. Everybody from the Nature Boy Ric Flair to The Undertaker, possibly Hulk Hogan, that's being rumored, to Kurt Angle, to the Bella Twins, to Teddy Long.
I'm sorry, the who?
The Bella Twins.
You're talking about WWE Hall of Famers, the Bella Twins?
Correct, yes.
Is that what you're saying? Yes, okay, cool.
Well, okay, yeah. Coco Beware is also Hall of Famer, so I'm not going to, you know, get all...
Coco Beware is awesome.
Here. Okay.
Well, Coco Beware is awesome.
All right. I mean, okay.
You know, maybe if he was boring, you might like him. Or, you know, maybe if they were like 5'3" and weighed 140 pounds and yelled boom every time they run to the ring, you might like
him.
He
was boring. He walked around with a piece of produce on his arm, for God's sakes. I mean, Jesus, you know.
Piece of produce? What's a piece of, what are you talking about, a piece of produce?
What people
don't
eat
produce?
People don't eat birds? Hello?
Not a fucking parrot. Who's eating a parrot at a supermarket?
Well,
you know?
I'd be surprised. You know?
What kind of supermarket are you going to? Is this a wet market?
Hey, listen, I'm Cuban, you know. So, it should be a good event on Monday. Bro, so many memories of these 30 years, from Austin to the Zamboni to Shawn Michaels retiring. Well, his final speech, obviously, after losing to The Undertaker in 2010, to, you know, Bret
when
Hart.
He lost his smile. Remember when he lost his smile? Huh?
Yes, and miraculously, his knee injury recovered in 30 days, and he was back to business. So,
modern medicine, that's right. There's no Mark conspiracy there, all right?
You know,
it was about, 25 Marines that beat him up? 18 Marines that beat him up?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
Five Marines or one Marine? I mean, anyways, that's irrelevant. He got beat up by the Marines. You ever been beat up by the military? Look at Saddam Hussein.
No,
he got beat up by the military. How's he doing, you know?
Well, you know.
Not easy. You can lose your smile real quick, all right?
Of course. Other memorable moments on Raw, obviously Bret Hart cutting that heel promo, turning heel in 97 after the double turn was in Austin.
I'm so sorry. You said Bret Hart had a memorable promo?
What, the night after WrestleMania when
I'm sorry.
He had a double turn and he turned on the United States? That wasn't America. Okay, I mean, you say what you want, but that's
cheap heat 101, friendo. All right, that's cheap heat 101. But
okay, guess what? Not everybody does cheap heat well, and that was an example where cheap heat was actually good, right? I mean,
and that's probably where you got it from. But all right,
maybe to Sergeant. You want to talk about cheap heat? To Sergeant Slaughter coming out and literally trying to burn. Well, actually, no. I'm sorry, though. Not Sergeant Slaughter. It was another Muhammad Hassan. Very polarizing figure, obviously, during that time period, to, again, Bret and Owen, the showdowns, to, the ending of Razor Ramon and Diesel, to just so many great memories in 30 years of Raw, and to The Rock.
Triple H coming back at the Garden. That was a great one.
I was there. I was there for that. I remember. I'll never forget that at L2.
Me too.
Yeah, to Goldberg debuting in 2003.
Goldberg, Goldberg. Love Goldberg.
Yeah, I remembered to switch the channel to Monday Night Football when I saw him on my screen. That famous segment where Michael Cole and, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Jerry Lawler. They came in the broadcast booth when the Nexus came on Raw and like destroyed the ring and annihilated John Cena. I mean, so many great moments in the 30 years of Raw, Pat.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, dude, there's been just like so many great matches, so many great moments. Batista quitting the company, doing his best Yeezy impersonation.
That's right.
I mean, dude, all the slammies. I mean, think about all the angles that started there, stuff like that. Obviously, on a sadder note, the Owen Hart tribute Raw, that was a really, really, really super emotional, episode. Eddie Guerrero's passing, I mean, so many different things, the invasion. I mean, who could forget when Eric Bischoff and Vince McMahon were on the same stage together? That was in the Meadowlands, too, right? I was at that one, I think.
That was the night after
WrestleMania 20, right?
Yep, that was a surreal moment. In 2002,
yeah.
Unbelievable to see that moment of Eric Bischoff, a guy that, literally just 2 years before, well, maybe not 2000 because it was really floundering, but just 4 years earlier, Eric Bischoff was doing everything in his power to put Vincent Kenny McMahon out of business. So a lot of surreal moments for sure during these 30 years of Raw. It's going to be very, very interesting, I think. As we approach, this Monday in Philadelphia. Other news, man, Vince McMahon coming to a multi-million-dollar settlement with ex-WWE referee who apparently had accused him of sexual assault in her back in the 80s. Wall Street Journal reporting this week that Vince McMahon has come to a multi-million-dollar settlement with ex-referee Rita Chatterton, who had accused Vince McMahon of raping her in his limo in 1986, in November of 2022, Chatterton demanded $11.75 million in damages in a letter to McMahon's attorney. According to the Wall Street Journal, sources have indicated that Chatterton agreed to an amount less than 11.75, but still in the multi-millions. The exact figure is unknown. The settlement was completed in December. Maybe no surprise. Maybe Vince wanted some of this legal headache or legal, not problems, but this litigation to maybe wrap itself up before he decided to, again, return as he has, right? Since he has the majority of voting shares in stock in the company. McMahon did go on to say, Mr. McMahon denies and always has denied raping Mrs. Chatterton, and he settled the case solely to avoid the cost of litigation. Chatterton came forward publicly in 1992 to accuse Vince McMahon of raping in 1986. However, no charges were brought against McMahon due to the statute of limitations running out prior to her public accusation. Again, I think that was more, I'm not an attorney, but I believe the statute of limitation had passed in the state of New York where the incident happened. New York law did recently open a one-year window that allows alleged sex crime victims to file lawsuits that would not have been possible otherwise due to the statute of limitations. Chadton attorney Sam McMahon that letter. Once again, the Wall Street Journal reporting that Chadton received a lump sum payment, followed by will receive a lump sum payment and will be followed by annual installments similar to McMahon's reported previous agreements with other women. As you all know, on January 6th, Ms. McMahon basically set up a corporate coup, putting himself back as the executive chairman, along with former WWE presidents there in the process. Certainly, he's intended to facilitate a sale of the company. Pat, not a surprise with this litigation. I think for all of us that understand litigation, and we don't need to have a lot of degrees to know this. It takes some basic reading. When you talk about litigation that could go on for years, billable hours, attorneys on retainer, it seemed that, hey, even if it's a less number, 11 million, it's not 11.7, let's just say it's 11 million for the sake of argument. You think about litigation, time in court, it probably was going to be much more affordable for Vince McMahon to settle out of court. It's not an admission of guilt. Some people take it that way. Because if you're innocent, you're innocent. You'll fight to clear your name. But I think in this case, probably from a logistical perspective, it was probably cheaper for Vince in the long run to go with this and pay a lump sum payment to this former employee. Some people are going to look at it as an admission of guilt, Pat. But for anyone who understands the legal system, especially in corporate law, sometimes, you know, this sort of liability could linger for years and it can be very expensive. It could almost be twice as much as it would cost him to settle out of court, Pat. That's my understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, this is common sense. And again, if you're not some, you know, angry mark with a vendetta, you know, you can look at this objectively and understand exactly what it is. You know, maybe there's some variables we don't know about. You know, maybe Vince promised her some money. Maybe something happened. Maybe he didn't pay her. I don't know. You know, we don't know. Maybe there's some other stuff that went on. But, yeah, I don't think it's an admission of guilt. I do think, and I do find it interesting, that stuff like this, like, starts popping up now. You know? Why did this happen, like, 10 years ago? Why did this happen, like, you know, I mean, the Chatterton thing was a long time, right? And, yeah, okay, statutes of limitation, right? That's fine. But, like, what about these other cases? What about these other allegations? You know what I mean? Which probably didn't really materialize to anything. You know, look, dude, at the end of the day, he's a person. He's a human being. He's a dude who has a lot of money. He has a lot of beautiful women throwing themselves at him that want to get over, that want attention, that want his attention, that want his money, okay? I do, and I'm not one for conspiracy theories here, but I do genuinely believe that there are people out there that are trying to screw Vince McMahon over somehow, that are trying to bring him down, quote unquote. You know, and I think that a lot of people are doing that because right now he's at his absolute richest. He's at his absolute strongest he's ever been. And I think that there's a lot of people that want to see him fall. But I think Vince is holding on, and Vince, you know, whether he did or he didn't do it, I really don't care, to be quite honest. I really don't. I really don't. If it's something serious, if he did genuinely commit a crime, then hey, man, you know, prosecute him to the fullest extent of the law. You know, he's not going to get special treatment over anybody else in that regard. But, you know, he's a powerful guy. He's got a lot of money. Women are going to throw themselves at him, you know, sooner or later. Some kind of situation will come up where somebody might feel slighted and they might want to do something about it. But I genuinely feel that there are people out there that are trying to kind of screw Vince over before he sells the company somehow. But, you know, hey, man, smart move for him to do it. I wish we could cue up Al Pacino's spiel when he's talking in The Devil's Advocate, you know, when he's talking to, like, Keanu Reeves, stuff like that. I think, like, it's when Eddie Barzun gets beat up by the bums and all that stuff.
Correct.
But I would just love to cue that up right about now.
Well, Pat, what's interesting, though, and again, I think that, you check up a lot of boxes in your analysis here, but I think the reason that wrestling fans, and maybe just in general, I think get so outraged or emboldened to be sanctimonious about this is I think that, you know, it's hard to compare everyday regular people to a multi-billionaire like Vince McMahon. And I think that, you know, again, as men, if we're accused of sexual assault and we know we're innocent, I mean, bro, again, we don't have the resources that Vince McMahon has. But I think that what people try to – and I don't want to conflate marks with, like, reasonable, well-read individuals. I'm not saying everyone has to have a PhD or whatever to think this way. But I think the reason that people look at cases like this, A, they look at the powerful, they look at the wealthy, they look at the privileged, and certainly are going to have, you know, anger towards it. That's always been the case. I just think that the reason people struggle with it is, again, they conflate it to everyday regular people, where God forbid you or I were accused of sexual assault, you know, again, we don't have the resources that McMahon has. Now, again, can we get good attorneys to the best of our ability based on our income? Probably, you know, hopefully. But I think the reason people get outraged though, Pat, is just the notion of like, hey, as a man, once you get accused of sexual assault, like that is a genuine scarlet letter that will follow you for the rest of your life. Again, and I think people look at it as like, hey, regular everyday people will fight this if they're innocent. Now, do they have the resources to do that? Maybe not. And sometimes that's why. And again, I can speak intelligently on this because I worked as a probation officer in Megan's Law and sexual offenses cases. Like that was my caseload that I supervised here for many years. And that's in county. Again, a little tidbit for our audience that didn't know about my background, but and a lot of guys that don't have the resources to fight a sexual assault indictment or a endangering the welfare of a child, all these sexual offenses, sometimes men will plead guilty, maybe to a lesser charge that leads to probation, that leads to being put on a sex offender registration. And again, I don't want to turn this into a course on criminal justice, but the point is that I think people get emboldened by this, Pat. Like, you know, regular people would fight this. If they are innocent, they would not be trying to pay off somebody or trying to bury it in a settlement. I think, again, we're humans. We're going to sin. We're going to make mistakes. But I think that people look at whether it's Vince McMahon or other people that get accused of sexual assault, when people want to clear their name, they'll clear their name. And when you're not eager to clear your name, I think that's where people get a little fickle. And I hope I explained it right for our audience, or at least I give a good illustration. So, I, again, to our audience, I apologize for my long-winded analysis here, but I'm just trying to make this concrete and understand that I think it's important to sort of decipher the differences between people of privilege and wealth and regular guys like us. And I think that's what gets people pissed off about the Harvey Weinsteins. And again, I'm not saying Harvey Weinstein is a man. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that this is what makes people angry about sexual assault and men that find ways to get away with it. Again, I'm not saying Vince did this, but that's the optic. Mm-hmm. And I think for regular people, that's something that people don't want to just dismiss. So I hope our audience got, hopefully I explained this right.
No, I think you did a great job of explaining it, and we can be as long-winded as we want to be. It's our damn show. But, and you know, if people don't want to listen, turn it off. All right. But we're talking some interesting stuff here. This is knowledge, okay? You might want to write this down. Take some notes out there, folks, all right? But, you know, as far as it goes with Vince, a lot of the people that are going to feel that way are just people that have an agenda towards him anyway. You know, people that are mad because, you know, he buried their favorite guy or, you know, he didn't put this guy over at WrestleMania or because of Bret Hart or because of whatever. You know what I mean? These are people that are just going to be mad about anything no matter what, and they've decided in their head that they don't like Vince McMahon. And they're not willing to look at these things. And, you know, they probably have their own sins. I mean, look, we all have done messed up stuff in our lives. I'm not condoning any type of sexual abuse. I think that stuff is awful. But you got to be realistic in this situation. And you got to look at it. He's not one of these guys who's going to get into, like, some relationship with a woman and he's going to court her for, like, months. And they're going to go out to dinner. And Vince is going to be like, screw Monday Night Raw. I'm gonna elope with you. No, that's not going to happen. Okay, Vince is going to do what he's got to do, okay? Whether it's in a different town or not, it is what it is. But there's going to be women ready to do that, okay? And I think that people need to understand that. And, you know, I mean, just take a look at, you know, some of your favorite athletes. They're not perfect people either, you know? These are guys who have a lot of power. They got a lot of money. And mistakes are going to be made. And also, you know, in some regards, it's very easy for things to be taken out of context, for things to happen, and for people to misconstrue that, you know. So, you know, either way, you know, I think Vince did whatever he needed to do to get by, but it really doesn't make a lick of difference to me. You know what I mean? I want to watch the program, and it doesn't take away from Vince's genius as a promoter and as a businessman.
Well, listen, I'm with you. I get completely your point. I just think that, you know, people get emboldened by this stuff. And if there's anything we've learned about the Me Too movement really in the last 5 years since it surfaced is to, you know, look at victims of sexual assault and to take it seriously and to really put men under a microscope, right? And I think that, especially in the entertainment business, and not to sort of delve off topic, but for anyone that is really interested about stuff like this, is a new film on Peacock called She Said. It's a biopic about the Harvey Weinstein saga and the two journalists that, you know, ultimately led to his downfall and interviewed women and exposed him and pretty much contributed to his downfall and to his indictment and everything else. You can catch that on Peacock. I actually was able to watch it with like two interruptions, which was a fucking miracle, since everything else is fucking 37 ads. But not to digress. But the, you know, Vince is, you said it perfectly, the optic on Vince is people are going to find an excuse to dislike Vince. And Vince could have fought, let's just say for the sake of argument, let's say Vince wanted to incur the cost of fighting this in court. Vince could have been found not guilty by a jury, just like he was in 1994. People would still be cynical, Pat. And people would say, oh, well, Vince, you know, Vince bribed the jury, or Vince is a man of privilege. Of course he's going to get off. He was dead to right in 1994. How the hell did he get away with this when we all know the doctor, you know, gave evidence? And regarding, Vince could have fought this. It probably would have cost him double what he paid to settle in legal fees. And guess what? People would still find a way to nitpick this and say, oh, well, Vince isn't really innocent. You know, that jury, you know, they shamed that woman or they slut-shamed her. You know, there's a variety of different things, bro, that people would say, oh, Vince got away with it. Of course he did. So I think either way, you can't win if you're Vince McMahon, Pat.
Fern, I mean, look, okay, you're a pretty polarizing guy, right, with some of the stuff that you do. People either like it or they don't, you know. But you're not somebody who goes out there to be malicious. You're expressing your viewpoint like other people. Okay, people are going to like you, and people are going to listen to you. People will be neutral about you and just listen to you and consider you. There's going to be people that are going to hate you, and they're going to try and figure out ways to screw you over maybe somehow. You know, how? I don't know. How? I really, really don't know, because I'm not – and I'm glad that this is recorded right now because I'm about to put you over, but this guy's a saint, okay? Maybe not, you know, in a relationship kind of sense, but for the most part, he's a saint. This guy does a lot of good stuff, and he's a decent human being, okay? And you're really going to have to dig up some dirt. I mean, maybe he cheated on a spelling test in second grade. I don't know, okay? But at the end of the day, people are going to hate you no matter what. People are going to like you no matter what. There is nothing that you're going to say that is going to change the opinion of those people because they feel that way. And it's the same thing with these marks. They don't like Vince McMahon for whatever reason. Vince McMahon could save 14,000 puppies from a burning building, and they're still going to hate him. Vince McMahon could find the cure for cancer and AIDS tomorrow. People are still going to hate him. That's just the way it is. But they're still going to keep tuning in, and that's one thing that's for sure. So, again, you know, he did what he had to do. He took care of what he had to take care of. I just want to watch the wrestling, people. I just want to watch the wrestling. I don't hate him. I don't have anything against this guy. I just want to watch a show.
I'm with you. I'm with you. And I think that that's going to be, you know, people are just going to have that long-lasting image of Vince for sure. Pat, let's get to some ratings here this week. Interesting, Raw, not a surprise. And, again, I'm not saying this because I'm trying to get heat here. But, you know, Raw was down about 200,000 this past Monday. Came in at 1.489, not a surprise. Again, as I mentioned, Wild Card Weekend, NFL was on, Dallas and Tampa, the polarizing matchup of certain fan bases, either tune in to see Tom Brady lose or to see the Dallas Cowboys lose. Not a surprise. NFL always does a good number on Monday. Raw was down from 1.693 the week before. It dipped this week to 1.489. I'm sure it'll come up again this Monday. It'll rise up again. So far for the first three episodes of 2023, on January 2nd, right after New Year's Day, 1.605, 1.693, and then, of course, this past Monday, 1.489. Interesting, though, a year ago at this time, on January 3rd, it was 1.7, January 10th, 1.6, January 17th, right after, actually, on Martin Luther King Day, which was also this Monday, 1.6. So Raw's where it is at this time of the year. It's January, NFL playoffs, not a surprise. I know people might say, oh, well, it was better with Vince last year, you know, heading creative. Raw's where it is, man. It's a good number. It's, you know, once, again, the playoffs, there's no more NFL Monday Night Football. It's the road to WrestleMania. The Royal Rumble's coming up. February's right around the corner. Raw's going to be back to the high ones. Might be flirting with two. Might go over two, Pat. Not a surprise. This is where Raw's always been. Again, as we approach the 30 years of Monday Night Raw, this is where it is, dude, in January. So I think people making a big deal about it, they either A, don't study statistics, B, they don't study trends, and C, they're just not going to see beyond their own bias. Is there a D in this multiple choice, Pat? I don't know. Am I missing something?
Nah, man, not at all. I think you nailed it. I will say, though, that it was better last year when Vince was in creative. But aside from that, yeah, this is kind of the usual trend. And again, I mean, people are going to always try and look for some type of chink in the armor because of their, you know, anti-WWE bias. You know, like people are just going to feel that way no matter what. So they're going to look for everything. And besides, doesn't Meltzer have to make that $12 a month? I mean, what is he going to do? Put over the WWE and talk about how great they are? That's not going to fly with that fan base. He's got to feed them. He's got to feed them, you know, in the trough right there, you know? Yeah, I mean, look, dude, it's trending. I mean, I'm sure plenty of Cowboys fans and Bucks fans tuned in for that. You know, some people, maybe Giants fans did tune in to see the Cowboys lose or NFC East fans. Maybe Tom Brady haters tuned in. Maybe Tom Brady lovers tuned in. But, you know, it's kind of expected. But I will say this much. Maybe some of those things Triple H is doing aren't really connecting. So I don't know. But I do expect a big number this week. I mean, it's a very heavily promoted show. I'm sure they're going to have plenty of surprises. You want the viewers to be there. They got some pretty decent matchups booked as well. So, yeah, you know, this is kind of where it's trending. But it definitely could be better. I will say that much.
Oh, no, certainly. And actually, Pat, I'm glad that you did bring up a specific name here during the rating breakdown. But obviously, another big news item, I'm glad that you brought it up because I would have missed it here looking at my my index cards. But I did have this down. Obviously, our favorite journalist, Uncle Dave Meltzer, obviously getting some hot water in the pro wrestling journalistic community about false reports, about being duped, I guess, in certain reports. I know, I think you mentioned it to me. I think you sent me something earlier today, off the air. Eric Bischoff obviously will never hesitate to take a jab at Dave Meltzer. I kind of like Bischoff in that way because I kind of like taking jabs at journalists I don't like either. But Eric Bischoff did tweet out, earlier this week, he wrote, quote, Dave is the definition of a useful idiot. Sloppy, lazy, and zero integrity. Surprised it's taken this long to expose him for what he is. Prominent wrestling journalist Dave Meltzer accused of publishing stories based on false information. You don't have to give Eric Bischoff too much ammunition to want to go after Meltzer. That seems like a lot of people have been doing that online. Again, Dave Meltzer being accused of not obviously reporting multiple incorrect sources for different stories. One story, obviously, that's got him in trouble. Listen, I'll use a real-world example here. Depending on what side of the aisle you sit on politically, folks, you're going to watch CNN, you and the other 37 viewers and people in airports, because it seems like they're really the only people that watch that stuff. But, you know, if you think that's credible, you're going to keep watching it. Same thing with MSNBC and its 12 viewers. Same thing with Fox, Newsmax, the Young Turks, News Nation now with Chris Cuomo and everybody else. You know, you're gonna read what you want to read, and you're going to take people at their value. And even if it's being discovered that they're not being credible or they're not being trustworthy, you know, people are going to have their favorites, Pat. And Dave obviously has been able to monetize this platform of his, where it's anti-WWE, where it's anti-Mr. McMahon, where he feeds into a lot of the marks, and he's monetized it. I mean, he charges $12 a month. I can't imagine paying $12 a month for crappy, shitty journalism. I mean, we all do it with our basic cable when we watch MSNBC and CNN, but Dave has really monetized this to a level that I think is unheard of, especially in dirt sheets.
Yeah, I mean, look, a while back ago, he was such a different guy, and, like, I respect Dave Meltzer, like, as somebody who was important to the boys in the business, you know, as somebody who is a historian, you know, Dave Meltzer used to be a really, really knowledgeable guy and somebody that the boys and the girls really liked and respected, and I'm sure that there's people that still do, but I think Dave, more importantly, knew good wrestling back then. He understood what the business was about. Now, obviously, you know, to me, Dave is like, he's like the opposite end of Jim Cornette. You know what I mean? They're kind of one and the same, in the sense that, you know, Dave really likes a lot of the newer wrestling, the mark wrestling, if you will, a lot of the high spots with the 73,000 false finishes and the 14,000 Canadian destroyers and the 6,476 super kicks, and, you know, and then they get beat with a DDT, you know, all that stuff. He loves that shit. And that's fine, because, look, there's fans that like it. But if you ask anybody who's in the business, anybody who's in the know, they're going to tell you that kind of stuff's not going to sell, see. You know, that's a niche audience type of thing. And obviously, AEW is a niche product. But Cornette, on the other hand, is very much rooted in tradition, and, you know, it's got to be like it's legit. And look, there's elements of it that I think are fantastic and are great, and we could apply it to modern-day wrestling. However, the business has evolved, and people gravitate towards characters. And, yeah, these guys could wrestle back in the territory days, but there's a lot of territory-day characters, man. There's characters that were charismatic that people gravitated towards. You know, so I just think that Meltzer has gone too far in that direction of trying to sit with the cool kids at lunch, you know? And I think that he's kind of sold out a lot of what made him respected to do that. Now, look, you know, people got to make a buck somehow, right? And before AEW started, you know, I was a listener of Meltzer. I was a listener of The Observer, because he would talk about a lot of New Japan stuff and a lot of Japanese stuff. And they would review matches, he and Alvarez, in a very articulate way. I mean, I almost kind of miss those days, you know, when I think about it. But Meltzer has just gone too far off the deep end because he saw an opening to make a buck. And because he knew that maybe WWE might not have used him or might not have helped facilitate a way for him to make money. When he saw the hatred, all the vitriol that the marks had for Vince McMahon, a light went on in his head, and he knew that he could capitalize on it. And obviously, he does still have a lot of the old listeners, you know, through the archives and stuff like that. But, you know, as far as it goes with, like, nowadays, he took that anti-WWE crowd, and he monetized it. And he's running with it, in fairness to him. And look, you know, he's got to make a buck. Is all of it good? No. I think if you listen to it long enough, you kind of see through the bullshit, because it's a lot of bullshit. And it's tilted one way. And it's almost as if, you know, there's times where you'll listen to it and it's like, Dave knows that the WWE is a certain way. Dave knows that the WWE thinks a certain way, and that their bottom line as a company is a certain way and what they're going for. He knows what the end game is for them. And it's almost as if he ignores it to kind of get himself over with that crowd even more to continue to keep making money off of them. So, you know, hey, man, Dave Meltzer's been wrong a lot lately. He's somebody who's in the back pocket of Tony Khan, and he's somebody who has not been the most honest guy in the world as far as it goes with wrestling. So, you know, I just think that at this point in time, Meltzer's kind of getting what he finally deserves. And I think that Eric Bischoff is a guy to do that. And I commend Eric Bischoff for doing it, because I think Meltzer's got to kind of stop with his lies and stop with his bullshit and really get himself together here, you know?
I'm with you. And I think that what's going on is this premise that, listen, the chickens are coming home to roost, folks, you know? And, you know, if you don't get that phrase, I suggest you Google it. I mean, there's a lot of significance here. Sometimes, you know, there's receipts. You have that much journalistic misconduct. Sooner or later, you're just going to come across the wrong story that's just going to expose you. And guess what, people? You can't give people – and, folks, if you haven't heard Jim Cornette's breakdown of analyzing Uncle Dave, I mean, it is gold, because we all know how much Jim Cornette hates Uncle Dave. So you can't give people like Bischoff. You can't give people like Jim Cornette and others any – even a millimeter of an inch of a window to open, because they're going to jump through it, especially if it's a chance to go after Dave. And I think that it's – listen, Dave also lacks awareness where he's making money. He knows he has an audience that's going to come hell or high water. You know, it's almost like the Postal Service, nor rain, nor sleet, nor snow. People are just going to gravitate to Dave and just say, oh, well, you know, okay, well, Dave made a mistake. It's okay. No, there's a concerted pattern of Dave being negligent and lacking credibility. Some people don't care. Again, I sort of equate it with, you know, and again, maybe this is my own personal bias. We all know CNN and MSNBC lies hourly, but people tune in. Some people think Fox News
is
incredible.
But, bro, Fox News is full of shit, too. Yeah.
Fox News is full of shit, too.
Tucker Carlson's full of shit. They're all full of shit, Perm, but they're making money off of people that like it.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I think and Dave has found a way to monetize this. I think that other people have learned, or at least not try to follow Dave's model or blueprint, but I think people looked at Dave and said, hey, you know what? This guy was kind of a pioneer. Let me see if I can monetize this and make a podcast out of it, have a weekly show. Because, again, folks, you know, people forget that while The Observer has been around for a couple of decades now, you know, just as comparable in terms of print was the Pro Wrestling Torch out of Minneapolis, out of, you know, Wade Keller, who's out of there. So, you know, again, people like them were smart. They learned, they saw an audience, they monetized this, they have a following. I don't listen to Pro Wrestling Torch on YouTube as much as I used to, but I try to catch it when I can. It's just, Pat, the problem is there's such a plethora of stuff now. I don't have enough hours in the day to listen to Disco, Eric, Conrad Thompson, Wade Keller. I try to avoid, you know, Brian Alvarez, Vinnie Craig, Jimmy Jam, Johnny, Jake, Joey, you know, with the Wrestling Observer Radio. I don't have time to listen to Jeff Jarrett. I don't have time to listen to Cornette. I try to listen to everything I possibly can on YouTube, because when I'm at my office, I'll put it in the background. But it's impossible. But because everybody has a podcast that, again, because they've been in the business, you know, and obviously we're trying to do the same thing. So I'm happy about our efforts. But again, there's such a plethora of information out there that, you know, sink or swim, Dave did kind of start the ball rolling on this 30 years ago. And good for him. But the problem is that now he's sunk so low that there's no credibility for Dave Meltzer. But people still pay $12. Go figure.
Well, but Fern, here's the thing, okay? Dave Meltzer has taken a group of the audience that, again, we've talked about on the show. And look, we're not Meltzer haters necessarily. That's not the case. We're kind of calling it as we see it, okay?
He did block Twitter, though. He did block me on Twitter, so fuck him. I mean, but that's my own right.
Proudest moment of your life. Proudest moment of your life, though. You called me – this guy, folks, called me within seconds of this happening, okay, and sent me a screenshot. I mean, you would have sworn that his kid would have been born, okay? That's how proud he was. But, you know, I mean, like, Meltzer, my whole gripe with Meltzer and with that whole community is that he made the marks feel emboldened that they know what good wrestling is, you know? And they know what good wrestling is for them. They know what they like. But it doesn't mean that that's what's going to work in a business sense. Dave Meltzer knows what works in a business sense. Dave Meltzer knows what the WWE is doing. He gets it. He understands it. But he still feels the need to go and criticize it to get some kind of points with I don't know who. You know, you listen to Disco and Conan. There's stuff that WWE does that they don't like, but they understand why. They get it. They get it, you know? Because they know what the WWE is about, okay? And I think, you know, if you're over a certain age, if you're over the age of 30 and you don't know what the WWE is about, dude, it's pretty sad. It's pretty sad. If you're still, like, taking it, like, it's some, it's if it's still real to you, damn it, that's pretty sad. Because you need to understand what the company is about and what the business is about. And, you know, again, Meltzer knows, but he's manipulating these people and he's emboldening these marks, you know, and there's people that'll come up to me and I'm fucking nobody in the grand scheme of things in the business, but I've worked and I've been in the business and they'll tell me that I don't know what good booking is or that I don't understand what booking is. I've worked in the business. I know how this shit works. You know what you like. There's a huge difference. But unfortunately, Meltzer has created an entire audience to kind of gravitate towards Tony Khan and his product. And, you know, he's kind of emboldened these people to go online and act as if they know what they're talking about. But they don't. And when they go and they try and say that Triple H doesn't know what he's doing, or Disco Inferno doesn't know what he's talking about, or Conan doesn't know what he's talking about, or anybody that has paid their dues, that has been in the business, whether it's a referee, ring crew, whatever, you've been in the business. You understand what it's about. You've been on the other side of the curtain. It is totally different than what fans think it is. And the end game of the program is totally different. You know what you like. So watch the product that you like. You know what I mean? Get into that. Be positive about it as much as you can, you know? But my gripe is just, again, these people that Meltzer is emboldened to think that they know more than people who's working in the business. You know, how would you like it if somebody came, let's say, to your classroom, okay, or came to your job, okay, and tried to tell you that they know what you're doing better than you do after you busted your buns to go and get educated to do it? Somebody coming up to me at my job telling me that they know my job better than you do. It's like walking into an operating room and being like, hey, listen, that heart surgery over there, pal, you're really botching that, man. You know, you're not putting that aorta over enough. You know, we got to do something here. You know what? Give me a set of gloves. Get me cleaned up, folks. I'm going in. Come on. You know what I mean? It's an insult.
Well,
it's an insult.
Well, you know, it's almost like that commercial. I'm sure you've seen it. The someone I think is – there was somebody who I think had like a medical emergency, and a woman goes, oh, my God, are you a doctor? He's like, no, I've seen a lot of medical dramas on Sling TV. And they go – I'm sure you've seen that commercial. If not, it's hysterical. But it's almost on the same premise of you, like, yeah, like you just mentioned. Yeah, it's like, oh, let me just, you know, put on gloves because I watched House or Grey's Anatomy.
Right.
So, no, you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct.
And it's trickled down into every other aspect of life, politics, medicine, everything. Let me tell you something. I went to high school with a good amount of people, okay, some of which I follow on Instagram. Some of these people could barely spell when we were in high school, okay? Barely knew even basic arithmetic. And all of a sudden, these people became infectious disease experts during the pandemic. Without going to school a day, without lifting a book, because they did their research. It's insulting. It's insulting for people to think that they know more than people who have studied. And that might be a controversial thing to say nowadays, but it's the truth. And it's arrogant more than anything else. It's arrogant, okay? So it's the same thing with Marks. You love the Yankees. I love the Yankees. Does that mean that I need to take Aaron Boone's job? Maybe a better guy does. Maybe a better guy does. That's for damn sure. But does that mean that I'm qualified to manage the fucking Yankees? You know? No, I'm not. I'm not qualified to manage the Yankees. Does that mean that I could go manage the Mets? So I got, hey, Buck Showalter, I know more than you. I've been watching baseball for 34 years. What the fuck? Like, come on. It just doesn't make any sense, folks. But Meltzer has grown that audience, has cultivated. And, you know, you got to give him his credit, man. Just like we gave Vince his credit here, you got to give Meltzer his credit. He's worked himself into a fantastic hustle. A fantastic hustle. But it spawned a shitty part of the fan base that we could really do without. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just type in hashtag wrestling Twitter on Twitter.
That's right. That's right, folks. Absolutely. Great take there, Pat. Pat, back to the ratings real quick here before we get to our main event topic, which were really, really important this week. SmackDown, obviously, still great numbers. Early twos. At the end of last year, certainly 2.629. But to start off the year so far, 2.25 on the first SmackDown of the year. Last Friday, 2.326. Interesting. Obviously, no surprise that last SmackDown of 2022, obviously the one with John Cena teaming with Kevin Owens against Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn. Thus far, the Bloodline storyline continues. Obviously, we're starting to see some cracks in the armor of the Bloodline, some dissension between Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn after taking the L during that SmackDown again on December 30th in the tag match against Cena and Owens. Great storytelling. Great numbers, still 2.23, high twos as we get further into the road to WrestleMania, going into the Rumble next weekend, and obviously into Elimination Chamber in February, right before Mania. SmackDown will, it'll be where it's at, dude. 2.3, might be high twos, cracking 3 million or more on a Friday. Again, it's just, it's different, folks. Television viewing has changed dramatically. Streaming, again, you have the NBA, you have the NHL, you have college basketball conference play, all these conference games. There's a lot going on television. Still great numbers for Fox, despite what, you know, the Wall Street Journal or other, you know, news sites want to say, well, maybe Fox isn't getting the return back. No, they're getting viewership, folks. Pro wrestling on a Friday between 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time, getting high 2 millions. Those are good numbers, folks. Let's not go crazy here. Pat, real quick here, what are your thoughts?
Again, not a conspiracy guy here, but I find it interesting. The media outlets are reporting this kind of stuff and have reported so much stuff on Vince when Vince is trying to sell the company and he's at his richest, but whatever. I mean, look, dude, find me a wrestling program out there on TV or just in general that generates 2 million viewers on average. Find me one. Find me one. You can't. It's WWE. WWE can do that. You know what I'm saying? Find me another wrestling program that can do that besides WWE. You cannot. You cannot. And it's a standard. And people know that it will be there. They promoted John Cena. But again, peaks and valleys with this stuff. Sometimes it's not going to always be great. Was every episode of The Sopranos great? There's a few that kind of dragged. They were kind of meh. You know, there was some that I could have done without. Was every episode of Game of Thrones great? No. Was every episode of any great show great? No.
Yeah,
you know, you're going to have your shitty episodes. You're going to have your filler episodes. But when it comes time to get to the big stuff, you're going to get the big stuff and you're going to get the payoffs. And this is what happens with the weekly episodic stuff, you know? And again, you know, people like Meltzer, they're going to critique. They're going to start throwing stuff out. Oh, The Rock might not show up. You know, I mean, Maybe Tony Khan said, hey, why don't you go and say this so that people believe this, so that maybe people start potentially selling their tickets to WrestleMania and they don't sell out completely.
And,
makes sense,
and we
right?
all know.
And this is,
yeah. And we all know.
Sure. Oh, no. Go ahead, Kev. Finish your talk.
No, I was just going to say that, and the fact, obviously, it came out this week. WrestleMania sold out. It could be the highest gate ever. So, I mean, certainly if that was the intent, maybe if we're theorizing here, clearly it's not working because the interest is as high as ever been for WWE content and programming because WrestleMania is basically sold out for both nights. And it's drawing the highest gate thus far. So, come on, folks. Again, you don't need an MBA from Rutgers Business School, one of the better business schools nationally, to understand these are elements of business that are very elementary.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Getting back to this, to what Tony Khan was saying real fast, you know, or maybe hypothetically might be telling Meltzer, This is something that happens on the indies with wrestling, okay? If there's two promoters in the same territory, in the same area that are running on the same day, they're going to try and take people away from that other show. They're going to promote bigger stars. They're going to do bigger stuff. So this is stuff that's, I mean, this is indie shit. This is indie shit. You're going to tell me that the indie company on TV, the indie shit company, wouldn't try and pull some indie shit with Dave Meltzer to try and maybe get people to resell their tickets for Mania? You know?
Of course.
Come on. This is something to think about here. You know what I'm saying? This is something to think about here. But, I mean, look, man, WWE's going to keep going. SmackDown's going to keep drawing high numbers. You might have a couple down numbers here and there. It won't be the end of the world. But overall, the companies, the networks know what they're getting with them. They've been knowing what they get with them. That's why people are still doing business with them. Okay? So WWE is going to keep going. And if you can find me any other wrestling program that generates higher than $2 million on average, I'll give you a big red bow. Okay? I'll give you a big red bow.
Absolutely. And speaking of Tony Khan, Dynamite ratings this week, I mean, slight increase, dude. Up 2,000 viewers from previous week, this week at 969,000 views. Not a great Dynamite. A couple of funny moments. Great match between Bandito and Bryan Danielson, no surprise. Dynamite leading off with Ricky Starks against Jake Hager, the Charisma Vacuum. Obviously, seeing Saraya and Toni Storm turn heel. You know, a little bit of a boost, not much. Obviously, up from the previous week, January 11th, 967,000. A real dip to start the year on January 4th, first week of 2023, at only 864,000. We go back a year ago at this time, Pat. On January 5th, 2022, it had 1.010 million. January 12th, 969,000. Actually, almost to the day, basically. Of the exact same number that this week. January 19th last year, 1.032, and January 26th at this time last year was 1.1 million. Again, variables, CM Punk was advancing his feud with MJF. We all know what golden television that was with the promo exchange, the back and forth. You know, not the case anymore. CM Punk is no longer on AEW television. The Elite just finished their best of seven. This week, the Young Bucks, fresh off winning their Trios Championships back in a very hotly contested best of seven series, lose to Top Flight out of nowhere. Not the best Dynamite. Again, Revolution is about 6 weeks away from the Chase Arena in downtown San Francisco. We know that MJF is going to be defending the title against Danielson. That's what we're gearing up for in an Ironman match. Just not great, great television this week. A couple of funny moments, Pat, but 969,000 still not moving the needle with Maxwell Jacob Freeman as the AEW World Heavyweight Champion.
Well, I mean, AEW just continues to, like, frustrate, at least frustrate me, because this is a company that had an opportunity to be doing a lot better, not just once, but many times. And every time it comes down to Tony Khan doing what he needs to do to get this company over with a more mainstream audience, he says, fuck you, and he just goes back to the marks. And it's really, really frustrating because he has a lot of tools. He's had a lot of tools. It's a little late in the game for him, honestly, but you know, if we're looking back, you know, 2 years, he's dropped a lot of balls, man. He's had a lot of opportunities to do big stuff, and he hasn't. And when something hot kind of comes up, he forgets about it. He ruins it, you know? Adam Cole debuting, ruined that. Bryan Danielson debuting, ruined that. Making Hangman champion, not the best move. Wardlow, dropping the ball with him completely. Awful. The CM Punk situation. How he didn't turn that into an angle. How he didn't monetize that is beyond me. All these other things that he's done. You know, the MJF thing, even him coming back, that wasn't great. was it great? Him coming back with the mask and all that. Everybody knew it was MJF. It was stupid. There's a million different ways you could have done it. That would have been more creative. It would have been better. Instead of some hokey BS wrestling thing, because they had something that fans were kind of like, hey, is this a work? Is this a shoot? What's going on here? You know? Couldn't tell you the number of people that I've talked to that would ask me. It was crazy. He got people talking about it. He got people talking about his product. And he dropped the ball. He just dropped the ball. This is just a byproduct of all of these fumbles that he's had. And it sucks because, to your point, the Danielson-Bandido match, it's excellent. It's great stuff. It's great wrestling. It's great storytelling. It's entertaining. Danielson can be a character. He can carry those kind of matches. It's what he went there for, you know, to do that kind of stuff. And it sucks that, you know, you're getting to this stuff now. Like, it's good, don't get me wrong, but, like, the mainstream interest is not there like it could have been. You know what I mean? The mainstream interest isn't there when it had potential to be at its peak. And that's the problem with a lot of what Tony Khan does and what he continues to do, and that's why it's frustrating. MJF could have been a lot hotter than what he was. You know what I mean? Look, the match itself, I'm sure will be excellent. I'm sure it will be excellent. And if they promote stuff, it's been proven that they draw a million, or at least in the ballpark of. So I just hope, again, that I feel like a broken record on this program saying this constantly, but I just really hope Tony Khan, like, wakes up one day and just decides to do the right thing for the sake of his company to grow the mainstream interest and to stop pleasing the marks and to stop worrying about star ratings and all this other nonsensical bullshit that doesn't draw any money.
Yep.
Rant over.
Again, I think that you said it perfectly. And, you know, to kind of quote Nick Khan, who appeared on a podcast this week, I mean, the name escapes me in terms of the show he was on, but, you know, having an understanding of operating with losses when you're getting money, again, folks, not to listen, I wish my dad gave me $100 million to spend however I want, but it's a lot different when you're running a business, not from scratch per se, but you're running it from an equity perspective where you're producing equity as opposed to running a company where you already had capital. Again, folks, I'm not trying to have class here. The professor's not trying to teach a business course here, 101, but there's a stark difference, folks, that you running a company when you already had equity and liquid capital in terms of money to start to begin with, as opposed to starting it from scratch and trying to keep it running fluidly and efficiently. There's a big difference, folks. So when people want to say, oh, Tony Khan's a good businessman, the money for AEW came from his father. He didn't raise it himself in business deals. So again, I'm not trying to sound like a hater, but there's a stark difference being the businessman when you have a great startup with money behind you as opposed to running a business that was a startup for all intents and purposes and keeping it profitable over the years. It's a big difference, folks. So again, I would suggest, you know, take some business courses if that's what you need. I don't want to pretend to be a business professor. That's not what I'm not. But interesting numbers for sure. Not really looking very good for AEW for sure, Pat. Ladies and gentlemen.
By the way, Fern. Fern, real quick before you get to it, it was the Bill Simmons podcast. For anybody that would want to listen to it, Nick Khan was on the Bill Simmons podcast. And folks, listen to it. Be objective. Listen to it coming from the perspective of a businessman, a CEO of a company. Don't be all emotional about it. Don't be a mark about it. It's really insightful, and I recommend it to anybody out there.
Definitely. But Bill Simmons and Bill Simmons, folks, Bill Simmons is probably, you know, a big, you know, likes wrestling, likes pro wrestling, you know, certainly a guy that will take his kids to it and enjoys it. So any aspect of this podcast, if you can listen to it, folks, it's definitely worth the listen. Our main event topic this week, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, does deal with the passing of Jamin Pugh, otherwise known as Jay Briscoe, one half of the iconic tag team, the Briscoe brothers, tragically passing away in an automobile accident. He was only, looking at the numbers here, he was only 39, if I'm not mistaken. I think I could be wrong here.
38. He was born the same year as I was, 84.
Yeah, he would have been 39 next week. And unfortunately, Jamin Pugh, otherwise known as Jay Briscoe, was involved in a tragic automobile accident this week. Details are still sketchy. Maybe coming back from taking one of his daughters to a competition, whether that was cheerleading, track and field, I don't know. But just a guy with a long lineage of a career in pro wrestling, starting off obviously with Combat Zone Wrestling in the early 2000s, obviously working his way to Ring of Honor, where he and his brother essentially for over 20 years were the dominant tag team in that company. Some stops along the way, obviously last year in Impact Wrestling at the first ever Multiverse of Matches where they battled the Good Brothers, Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson. Obviously some years in New Japan Pro Wrestling, a plethora of titles that he and his brother won over the years, certainly from New Japan to Ring of Honor to Real Championship Wrestling, Pro Wrestling Unplugged, the Premier Wrestling Federation, NWA Wildside, the National Wrestling Alliance, winning the Crockett Cup with his brother Mark in 2022, House of Glory, amazing worker, an amazing talker, clearly a family man, a long list of accolades. To see this man now passing in the prime of his career, you know, as a fan who's had an enormous amount of respect for what the Briscoes mean to this business, it was tragic news to see this. My heart goes out to his family. My thoughts are with his wife and kids and his family and his brother, certainly, and his immediate family. A tragic loss for the pro wrestling community. Again, as a fan, Pat, I know you as a worker can certainly give this a lot more justice than I could, again, just as a fan alone.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny you mentioned that. So when I saw the news of this, I was, you know, I was really sad, just as everybody else was from wrestling business. But in my time in the independents, I had the opportunity and the privilege to know Mark and Jay and to work on shows with them for JCW. You also forgot to mention Jersey All-Pro Wrestling, which was another promotion where they also made their name at, along with, you know, the aforementioned Ring of Honor and Combat Zone Wrestling. But, you know, both of those guys were very, very, very good athletes. They understood the business quickly. They were ambitious, and they were a family, you know. The Pugh family, you know, they were always there. And this is when I remember just it being, you know, Jay's dad, really, that was there with them, or Jay's mom and dad. But, you know, they would drive from Delaware up to Jersey to work these shows, to work these indie shows, so that the boys could, you know, get their experience, get their reps in. You know, they went to ECWA, the East Coast Wrestling Association, which at that time in the early 2000s was, you know, pretty much a gateway to WWE, or at least enhancement work, getting looked at, you know, getting invited for tryouts and stuff like that. So, you know, at that time it was run by Jim Kettner. And Jim Kettner was the guy who held the prestigious Super 8 tournament. You know, that was a tournament that made a lot of people. I mean, Brian Danielson was in it. Loki was in it. Christopher Daniels, Devin Storm, Inferno Kid, Reckless Youth, Trent Acid, Shark Boy. I mean, the names go on and on and on and on. But the Briscoes were just dudes that just got it. You know, they weren't just young, talented guys, athletic guys that were just big marks that could just, you know, that wanted to hit their skit or, you know, do whatever. Like, they understood the art of wrestling. They understood what it was like, but they knew how to pop a crowd too, and they knew how to do some really exciting stuff. And you know, they developed as wrestlers. They developed as performers. Back then, they weren't really talkers. They were kind of shy, you know, Mark especially. But, you know, those boys could go, you know. And it was just so fun seeing all their matches and all this stuff and talking to them, you know. And one thing that I can say that I'm sure anybody who's ever met Jay and Mark Briscoe or been around them for, you know, some time can tell you is that they were really good guys. They were really just down-to-earth people. You know, one of my friends in the business, who was a booker for Jersey All-Pro, Angel Sarita, had nothing but great things to say about him. You know, this is the kind of guy that, you know, wasn't a mark for himself, wasn't just trying to get his shit in, you know, wasn't trying to do anything like that.
wasn't trying to get his stuff in, wasn't trying to do anything like that. And can you please hold?
Sorry about that. So as I was saying, you know, these are guys that, you know, just understood what the business was about and wanted to be in the business, wanted to grow in the business, and knew that they were a part of an ensemble cast, you know, every time they stepped into that ring, you know, and when it was their time to shine, it was their time to shine, but they knew what the business was about, and they were humble, and, you know, they were guys that you could really, really see going a long way. I mean, you know, I remember seeing them and them reminding me instantly of the Haas brothers, you know, or the Steiners or the Bulldogs, you know, they had this intangible, they had this it factor. And I think personally, them as performers, you know, and as people, I don't think they ever got too full of their own shit, no matter how much they succeeded, because they succeeded a lot. And in the 20 years that they were a team, you know, Jay and Mark wrestled all over the world, you know, did tours in Japan when they were teenagers, you know, just went everywhere and gained so much experience and so much knowledge, but they stay humble. They stayed grounded. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that, you know, they were a family and you know, the way their father raised them, I think he didn't really let that happen. So, you know, like I said, you know, that was something that really, really hit me hard when I saw it, you know, and mainly because, you know, the experiences I had meeting him, knowing him, seeing him, you know, being around him, working out with him, you know, in a ring, rolling around with him and stuff, you know, and also as a father, you know, that was just really, really hard to read. You know, both of his girls were actually with him in the car. One of his daughters, age 12, the other one, age 9. And, you know, one of them, unfortunately, you know, is undergoing surgery to, you know, hopefully get feeling in her legs again. You know, it just a tragic, tragic situation. And this is a guy that, you know, doing the right thing, being a father, you know, not being, you know, a scumbag, not doing anything messed up, being there for his family. And, you know, this unfortunate accident happened. But, you know, for me, they leave an amazing legacy behind, not just as professional wrestlers. And you know, and we don't know what Mark's status is, and I think people should respect that. I don't think people should be saying stuff like, well, who's Mark going to team with? No, no. You know, this is about their family. You have to respect their family. You have to respect their privacy and their wishes right now. And that's all there is to it. But, you know, the Briscoe brothers as a tag team leave behind an amazing legacy. And, you know, for me, I put them up there with the Haas brothers as, you know, the greatest tag team that I had seen with my own eyes. And, just, you know, such a tragic, tragic loss for wrestling. But, you know, all thoughts of positivity to his family, you know, and all the best to his daughters and his son and just his whole family in general. And, you know, we're all pulling for you guys, and we all wish nothing but the best to the Pew family.
Yeah, an iconic tag team, and from everything we're reading, obviously, two genuinely good human beings, guys that were not ever, you know, and we use this term a lot on the show, marks for themselves, never got to, you know, way too conceited in the business or way too sort of having their egos inflated. You know, regular guys from Delaware, right? Who, again, it almost makes you wonder what was their job? Was it like the legitimate farm that they owned where they made money, producing, you know, agriculture, or pro wrestling? I think you can make the case they were maybe comparable in terms of what they were making money wise, you know. But they lived very well, comfortably. They were iconic characters. I think very different characters than what we were used to. Because, again, man, when we think about tag team wrestling, and I know, insert old joke here any moment, but, yeah, I'm older than you, but I remember just growing up with, you know, we grew up with sometimes with gimmick tag teams, you know, the Samoans to the Islanders, to the Hart Foundation, to the Killer Bees, to Demolition, to the British Bulldogs, to the Rockers, to the Young Stallions, the Conquistadors. The Brainbusters, to the Fabulous Rouge. Like, there were just so many different characters and personalities that we've come to know about tag team wrestling. But Mark and Jay were, that was a really different look for them in the early 2000s. And, like, you know, for all intents and purposes, you looked at Mark and Jane. You're like, yo, these guys look like they're out of their minds. These guys look like a bunch of country guys from Delaware. What in the world? But you know what? Solid, amazing workers. Obviously got better on the microphone. And they were original. That, folks, that Briscoe Brothers gimmick, the Briscoes, was as original a gimmick as you can find. Did they maybe pull in some stuff from wrestling that they saw? Sure, I think everybody does that. But talk about originality and content. And talk about character development. I know that, and folks, you know, obviously, Pat and I talk off the air, and, you know, full disclosure, you know, Pat loves to bust my balls all the time about FTR, my fandom for FTR, and I get it. I'm a fan. I'm a mark. But I understand that there's a lack of originality with what they present as a team, and I'm intellectually honest enough to admit that. I'll say it out loud. I just said it on this broadcast. I'm going to stand on it. You know, I'm going to plant the flag in the ground and say, hey, I can at least concede that and be intellectually honest. The Briscoes were as original an idea and a concept as you'll ever find. It's going to be impossible to ever duplicate what they represent in terms of presentation and wrestling and them as a gimmick, as a team and what they represented. You know, sorry to get all this whole historical type of narrative here and narration, but I think it's important to sort of illustrate that because that's how original they were. That's how important they were.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you summed it up really well, you know, that's just a little bit of it. That is honestly just a little bit of it. I mean, for me, you know, you look back at this character, you look back at their evolution, the way they started out with the singlets and the shaved head, not really talking much, all business in the ring. And then, you know, they end up finding kind of like their voice and they realized, hey, we are a gimmick, you know, and just Mark with the missing teeth in the front and the way he moves like a chicken in the ring and, you know, but they're so good. They're so crisp and everything they do makes sense and it looks great. And, you know, you have Jay, who's kind of the more outspoken one with the dreads and the beard and the tattoos and stuff like that. You know, for me, they're a tag team that they could have thrived in any era. You could insert them anywhere and they would have thrived. They would have worked, you know, just because of the way they were as performers and just how they developed as characters. And, you know, it wasn't always like that for them, but they found themselves. And, you know, speaking of FTR, I mean, like, they had amazing matches with them, you know, this
yeah.
last year alone. Mm-hmm. Like, some of the best matches, not just of their careers, but in the history of the wrestling business and tag team wrestling.
Yep.
You know, just classics with them, you know. And it, to me, it's a testament to how good, you know, the Briscoes are. It's a testament to how good FTR is. You know, FTR is a very talented tag team in the ring. They can go. Technically speaking, in the ring, they're very, very good. To your point, they kind of lack the character part of it, you know. Whether they develop that or choose to develop that remains to be seen, you know.
And mind you, Pat, like, I said this on a broadcast today, and I don't mind, and I don't care. I'll stand by it. I love FTR,
sure.
But I have to be intellectually honest enough to concede the points that, yes, while they're just good wrestlers, the character work is lacking. So a lot of FTR fans won't be that honest. A lot of FTR fans will not be that transparent. But I will be, because I think it's important to understand what tag team wrestling is. And, again, the Briscoes just, I mean, you're right. They would have thrived in any era. But this was really original. Not to call them rednecks or country folk or whatever. The point is, it was a really original gimmick of two guys from the country that just became good talkers, were intimidating. I mean, you looked at the Briscoes, you were like, holy shit, like, I'm scared for my life.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
was a gimmick
yeah.
that's going to be impossible to replicate. Again, you look at what the Briscoes mean to tag team wrestling. Again, it's a shame. Listen, we're not privy to phone calls. We're not privy to text messages. We're not privy to conversations. It would have been great to see them in WWE at some point in their career. Who knows? Maybe Vince at some point did talk to them. Then maybe they didn't care for the travel schedule. Yeah, they would have made money, but guess what? Maybe the rigors of how laborious the WWE lifestyle is, the travel. Again, we're talking about pre-pandemic, okay, because they've been a hot tag team for years. Who knows? Maybe Vince did talk to them. Maybe they just didn't want to take the money. Maybe they just, again, from what we've read, they have their family in Delaware. The amount of traveling that would require them being with the WWE, apparently it wasn't for them, and that's okay. And they were good making the money that they made. They weren't struggling. It's not like they were like pinching pennies, folks. They lived well, aside from their business that they have in agriculture and farming. But it seems like they weren't interested in going to WWE. I'm certain the offers were there. Maybe it's not for everybody. That travel schedule, the rigors, the demands. It would have been nice to have seen them. But, again, we don't know the logistics. But I'm just hypothesizing with you.
I know that Jay had been on a few podcasts, and he'd been asked about it. And he had kind of said, you know, he doesn't know how he feels about it, you know, or leaving his wife, you know, with three kids. Like, you know, again, a testament to how much of a family man he was. You know, a testament to that, to the fact that, you know, money wasn't everything. You know, he wrestled because he loved it. Mark wrestled because they loved it. And his family was the most important thing in his life. But, yeah, absolutely. I think it would have been great. Speaking of WWE, I mean, you know, to see a guy like Triple H, who Mark and Jay, I think, had a dark match. I don't think they ever officially worked for WWE. But, you know, Mark and Jay... You know, for Triple H to tweet out condolences to Jay says a lot about their impact, not just, you know, in Ring of Honor, but wrestling as a whole. You know, Biggie had also tweeted that, you know, the New Day had borrowed stuff from them, had stolen at some point, you know, some of their stuff, some of their moves, and how they were innovators to tag team wrestling for the time. You know, in the last 25 years, I mean, the Briscoes, you know, they got to be up there, you know, with the best tag teams in the last 25 years and some of the best all time. So, you know, for them to do that, for them to mention it even on NXT, you know, that was really, really huge. And I think really it's one of those nice moments where, you know, you see the quote unquote wrestling community come together. You know, you see that it is a brotherhood where people, you know, who've never even met them, who work for WWE, recognize, you know, their contributions to the business and the way they are as people and respect them and acknowledge them. And that's such a huge testament to just their legacy and just the way they were as people. So, you know, it's such a sad moment, but, you know, on the same token, you know, we look at these things and, you know, we realize that, you know, life is very precious and life is special, and that it's important to maximize everything you can in this life, you know, because you don't know how it is that it's going to affect others. And I'm sure want to leave our own legacy behind. So, you know, and Jay to me is one of those guys that took advantage of every second that he had in life. And, you know, again, just really left behind a fantastic legacy, not only as a wrestler, but as a man and as a father. And he's somebody that, you know, I think we could all respect for sure.
Absolutely. Again, tragic loss in the pro wrestling community, obviously. Jay Briscoe passing away at the age of 38, gone too soon, certainly this past week. Our hearts and our thoughts and prayers go out to his immediate family. I know there is a GoFundMe page. And sometimes I know we're a little skeptical of GoFundMe because of stuff we've learned over the years. Sometimes people do some really malicious things. But apparently it is a legitimate GoFundMe. I don't have the link per se. Sometimes those links are very, very long, folks. But if you Google it, I believe that there is a certification on that GoFundMe page for the family of Jay Briscoe. So, again, our thoughts and prayers that will go out to him. A great guy in the wrestling community, a great father, great wrestler, but just a great human being. And God knows we need more of those, not just in pro wrestling, but I think in overall society as a whole. So, again, unfortunately, Jay Briscoe, ladies and gentlemen, passing away this week at the age of 38 in a tragic automobile accident. Folks, before we call it a week here, on this day in pro wrestling history, January the 20th, some notable things here. In 1997, while sporting the crow gimmick that Steve Borden, a.k.a. Sting, started using, obviously, started rappelling himself from the rafters early part of 1997 after he just embraced the gimmick. That really kind of started off for the rest of the year as that gimmick would culminate in a feud with Hulk Hogan. Later on in that year, Starrcade emanating from Washington, D.C. On this day in 1997. In 1998, unfortunately, on this day, Bobo Brazil, one of the key figures in breaking down barriers for African-American pro wrestlers, passed away at the age of 74 in his home in St. Joseph, Michigan. In October of 1962, Bobo Brazil became the first African-American NWA World Heavyweight Champion when he beat the Nature Boy, Buddy Rogers. Also on this day in 1998, Owen Hart, interesting, Owen Hart, this certainly seems like one of the more memorable moments in Raw history, became the WWF European Champion when he defeated Goldust. Now you probably wonder, well, why is that so significant, Fernando? It's just a title change. Well, what was unusual about the title change, ladies and gentlemen, was that the champion at the time was indeed Triple H, who was feigning an injury to get himself out of having to wrestle Owen Hart. WWF commissioner, the esteemed Sergeant Slaughter at the time, allowed Goldust, who ended up dressing up as Triple H, to take his place and subsequently would lose, and thus Owen Hart would win the WWF European title. On this day also in 2002, from the Phillips Arena in Atlanta, Georgia, it was the host of the Royal Rumble, an amazing Royal Rumble, obviously, with Triple H winning. We all know about his historic return, really on the first Raw of 2002 from the Garden. Being there, that was surreal. I thought I lost my hearing that day, seeing Triple H return. He would eliminate Kurt Angle. Unfortunately, it was also the last pay-per-view appearance for Kurt Hennig, who made a surprise return as one of those legendary surprise entries during the Royal Rumble. Obviously, we also saw an iconic street fight between Ric Flair and Vince McMahon. first time that Ric Flair would appear on a WWF pay-per-view since losing a Loser Leaves Town match, coincidentally, to Mr. Perfect on Monday Night Raw in 1993, subsequently the first Raw in its history in 1993. Also on this day in 2003, William Regal and Lance Storm would unseat the Dudley Boys to win the WWE World Tag Team titles. On this day also in 2014, future Hall of Famer and newly minted Hollywood star, fresh from his success on Guardians of the Galaxy in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Dave Bautista made his return to the WWE for the first time since 2010. He declared his entry for the Royal Rumble, a match he would go on later to win. Also of historical note, on the same show, CM Punk wrestled Billy Gunn in what would be Punk's last match in WWE. He would walk out of the company 6 days later, right after the Royal Rumble. And folks, all those good things happen on this day in wrestling history on January the 20th. Pat, any closing thoughts here as we call it a broadcast?
Nothing much, man. Just want to send a shout out to some of my sponsors real quick. Bonita Brand Plantain Chips, big shout out to them. big shout out to La Croix. Big shout out as well to Evian and Plan B, as well as Tapatio Hot Sauce. Also shout out to Cookie and the Bear and Winks and the rest of the child actors, wherever you are, as our drummer courageously fights back after being put in an abdominal stretch for 6.5 hours after somebody paid a bounty. To put him in that abdominal stretch. So he's got some sort of blood feud going on. Last I heard, it might have been Greg the Hammer Valentine that put him in that abdominal stretch while he was asleep. But as far as I know, Chris is looking for revenge. He bought a big silver Cadillac. He's going to put on some cowboy boots, and he's going to go kick this motherfucker's ass. So, please don't message me on social media. I don't answer it. I don't answer texts either. and keep listening to the show. Keep on keeping on. Life's a garden. Dig it.
Oh, very well said there by the PBR superstar, Patrick Rivera. Folks, again, as a reminder, coming up this Monday on Real Talk, which you can check out at 6 p.m. Eastern time via Jersey First TV on jerseyfirst.org, also on their YouTube page, as well as on LinkedIn. I'll have a double main event this Monday, folks, as I'll be interviewing at 6 o'clock, Assemblywoman Beth McCarthy Patrick from South Jersey. It's an election year in the Garden State, folks. All 80 Assembly seats are up for grabs this November, and all 40 State Senate seats are up for grabs. So exclusive with Assemblywoman Beth McCarthy Patrick, and, of course, also in the second half of the double main event at 6:35 Eastern Time, I'll be interviewing Michelle Sirkirka. She is the president of the New Jersey Business and Industry Association, NJBIA. Probably wondering, Fernando, why is that a big deal? Well, it's a recognized leading voice for businesses in the state of New Jersey for over 110 years. It is the premier nonprofit organization overseeing business and industry, again, in the Garden State. So Michelle Sirkirka, its president, will be joining us. Again, she doesn't do a lot of these interviews, so those are the exclusives you continue seeing every Monday night on Real Talk with Fernando Uribe, folks, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Put it on your calendars. Watch it. YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook Live via StreamYard, also on Instagram Live, as well as on Twitter. Check it out, folks, this Monday on Real Talk via Jersey First TV. Folks, always remember, write to the show, workinthemarks@gmail.com. What you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. Are we cursing too much? Are we not cursing enough? What the fuck? Tell us. Write to us, workinthemarks@gmail.com.
I got one. Is double main event a bullshit term? That's a good one, right? Because there's probably no more bullshit term than double main event. But, yeah. There's no such thing as a double main event. There's only one main event.
Well, maybe a double header.
Unless you're having both the matches at the same time.
Double header is better.
Unless you do the matches side by side at the same exact time and they're both the last match, that's the only way it's really technically a double main event. But anyways, go ahead. Finish this spiel. I'm done talking for the episode.
I got to – and they call me OCD about language. I tell you, folks, you got to love the PBR Superstar. You got to love them. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at @working_the_marks. Also on Twitter, folks, at @working_marks. Check us out on our own Instagram at Patty Rican, PaddyRican. And also my Instagram as well, at the Fernando Zone. Also on Twitter, folks, at PatrickSKVM. And also as well, at the Fernando Zone. Folks, shout out to Fancast Media for always for helping share our content to our great producer, D. Rotten. I'm not going to give his government name to make sure he stays hidden from government and everything else that goes with it. D. Rotten, make sure you follow him on Instagram. Great page on his own, at D. Rotten. A great comic book and pro wrestling aficionado. We're blessed to have him on the show, producing shorts for us and all our clips that get produced and obviously released on social media. Shout out to D-Ron. And, of course, shout out to Famcast Media for supporting this podcast and obviously really being a partner with us, as you can check out Work in the Marks via blogtalkradio.com/workinthemarks. Of course, also on Spotify and on SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcast. Whether you're walking your dog, going to the gym to work off those annoying holiday pounds you put on, whether it's rushing to a booty call, whether it's, I don't know, waiting for that chick to come to your house, pouring a glass of wine, whatever it is, folks, take Working the Marks with you wherever you get your podcast. He is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the illustrious, the glorious, the dubious, the notorious, the PBR superstar, Patrick Rivera. I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, the professor, Fernando Uribe, and folks, every single week here on Blog Talk Radio. You know what we're doing? We're working the marks. We'll see you next week, folks. Big Royal Rumble preview show. Again, check us out, blogtalkradio.com/workinthemarks. Folks, have a great weekend. Enjoy the NFL playoffs. Let's go, Cowboys. I got to say that out loud. I don't care.
Let's go, Niners! Dallas sucks!
And we're going to have a great divisional round weekend. Check out the NBA, folks. Great NBA action this weekend. And the pitchers and catchers in less than 2 weeks. So a lot to talk about as we approach the spring, folks, here on Blog Talk Radio. We're always working the marks here. We'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio.